You're listening to The Point. Middle-aged women are America's largest demographic group, and in addition to juggling work and family, they are also going through hormonal changes, changes that can cause hot flashes, headaches, weight gain, and even depression. While most American middle-aged women find little to laugh about, menopause writer, performer, and comedian Sandra Ting Lo does. Her memoir is The Mad Woman in the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones, and she joins us on the phone from L.A. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, so listeners may think your name and voice is familiar because you've been a regular commentator on Morning Edition, This American Life, and Marketplace. Your commentaries and writing have always touched on your personal life, but your book is about your late 40s when your life became somewhat of a roller coaster. So describe what was happening to you.
Okay, so that's menopause is what happens when you stop having cycles. Perimenopause is when things start to go absolutely wacky. Hormone levels go up and down, can start as early as in your 30s and last from 4 to 15 years. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. But the average age which of its onset is about 46. So 46, and I had made my, if anybody kind of has heard any of my commentaries from the past, I'd made my career as sort of a affable mom, PTA mom, longtime married, solid family, et cetera, et cetera. At 46, a couple of us moms who had been public school volunteers got in an RV and went to Burning Man because we wanted to do something different. And while there, I ended up realizing, as in sort of a Merchant Ivory movie moment in the desert, that I go, oh my God, I am in love with my best friend, who's my male business partner of 10 years, also married. You know, we were both married with children. And it, sort of in a mad way, which can be hormonal because stuff is going up and down and changing, we had an affair and sort of blew up our marriages and our lives. And he actually ended up, like, moving back home and leaving me. So it was kind of like, I am now, like, a 47-year-old woman who's living alone in a dark bachelor cottage, displaced, homeless, throwing my books in a dumpster. I mean, it was this extraordinary midlife crisis meltdown, which, if you look at it from the spectrum of things, is sort of was the beginning of my change, sort of hormonally. I didn't see it at that at the time. But and I think that as we start talking about these things, the experience of sort of writing this book and sharing it is that more and more people come to me and say, sort of letting the facade down of the perfect lives that they're trying to live, and say, yeah, you know, it's really hard. Marriage, parenting, working.
It's a lot going on, yeah. And so you thought you also might be going crazy. You were depressed, moody. Oh, yeah, right, menopause. It took you a while to figure that out, though.
It did. And I think that, again, as multitasking women, we'll think something is either wrong with us or it's because we didn't hydrate enough that we have a mood coming on. We try to kind of stave off, you know, moods and try to keep an even keel in this. And then you can be told, as a friend of mine did, she said, well, I know you're feeling, you're depressed and crazy and gloomy. When did you last have your period? And I go, well, I don't know who keeps track of them anymore. But that when you start to notice that if your periods are fluctuating, you're probably in perimenopause. But they can tell that to you, and then the next day you'll forget.
Yep.
Part of it as well, as you go, no, this time it's my fault because I'm so tired today and the laundry isn't done. Like, no, it is your body is going through big changes and hormones are actually rewiring your brain and your mood and everything. So it's a big deal.
And
but it took me a while to figure it out. And books that I tried to buy books on it, and except for Christiane Northrup's The Wisdom of Menopause, which is a great book, although it is 700 pages long, so those with short attention spans, you know, sweating might not get through it. Many of the health books are as usual with women. They say, oh, it's simple, just cut out alcohol, sugar, and caffeine.
That's simple, right?
Right?
Yes.
And then just drink more water and eat kale and do yoga and go for plenty of walks, which is the same advice they give to you when you're pregnant. You're not fertile. It's the same. It's always the water and the kale. Why? Didn't help them, is not going to help now. So, you know, it's the experience of writing this book. I wanted other women to have a book they could turn to that says, you know, kind of lower the bar, make it easy.
Yeah. And one of the common refrains in all this literature you're talking about is that the exercise will help with the symptoms and help you lose some of the weight you've gained. So you and Mr. Y, your business partner, who
Yes.
Both join a gym. You work out with personal trainers. After 3 months of workouts, strict adherence to the Zone diet and counting calories, you've gained 2 pounds and Mr. Y has lost 23. So can you read about this from page 144?
If I can get through it without shouting, it's still making me so angry. Where I go, okay, I've gained 2 pounds. He has lost 23. How is this possible? As opposed to me, Mr. Y has allowed himself the occasional bagel, that's carbs, and chocolate bar, and has even begun taking non-Zone diet lunch meetings with some of his old theater buddies. I'm not going to lie. I had pad thai and spring rolls and a beer. Increasingly also, instead of the gym, there's an afternoon of golf at the local community course, which, as far as I can tell, when done with a golf cart, counts as neither weight training nor cardio. Oh, no. All these things I might have borne, but then Mr. Y went one step too far. Certainly I was going on a bit long about the unfairness of it all, saying, I can't believe that with how little I eat and how much I exercise, I can't actually move the needle any way but up. Menopause tip for men. Dear men, note that if a female close to you utters something like the above sentence, appropriate responses include, oh, honey, it is unfair, damned unfair, F the world, shiza, or I think you could gain another 20 and actually start to look normal. Why are you start trying to hang on to this skeletal weight? I'm seeing collarbones. Note, say this whether or not it is actually true. Or, darling, I can't bear to see you suffer. I threw away the scale and made you a martini, or similar. What you should not say is what Mr. Y said on this day, a.k.a., I know you say that you work out every day, honey, but maybe it's how you work out. Fabrizio, my trainer, says you have to really intensify your cardio in order to burn fat. Once you get your heart rate up to 145, it really has to stay there for as long as 20 to 30 continuous minutes to really score that maximum burn. He may also have foolishly said, I think that's why I can eat a bagel and still lose weight. It's true I don't work out as often as you do, but when I do, I really go for it.
Did you want to just smack him?
Totally. I mean, it's like, you've got to be kidding me. And men, you know, they think they know everything, and then they compare their bodies to ours. And it's like, in no way, you don't know what it's like. You don't know what it's like. And I tell this other story in the book of that you eat less and less, and you're still gaining weight. And in fact, the bad news is you can even literally fast, and your body will go into this hyper, oh my God, I'm fasting, and like not lose weight. And so I had this experience of, I put off going to the gynecologist for a year because I couldn't face standing on the detecto scale and seeing the number. Yeah. But finally, it gets so bad that I go there. And so I'm crying in the waiting room, just weeping. And I go, oh, at least I'm losing water weight. And then they call me in Sandra, and then they put me on the scale. And I have to look at it. And it's a horrible number. It's beyond what I could even imagine. And then they say, oh, wait a minute. Sandra, are you Sarah? No, we called the wrong person. So they send me back out into the waiting room. And I keep crying. And, and then they go, okay, Sarah. And they take me back in. They put me on the same scale, and I've gained a pound and a half. No, this is unbelievable. Not that I'm not eating. I'm shedding water weight, and I'm making weight out of like air. So that's an amazing. Maybe I should think of it as an amazing thing, and I can get some of my energy and give it to third world countries or something. It's ridiculous.
And so, and we're laughing. It is funny, but at the same time, this episode is the straw that breaks the camel's back, so to speak. And you reach a low. A real low.
Yeah, totally do where, and I think it's that morning, I think if you're a mother in this middle-aged generation where, at an age when you really should be in a cave alone by yourself, you have to juggle children and an elderly parent. And I think, and I wrote about this in my original piece for the Atlantic Monthly called The Bitch Is Back, where, you go, how can I keep going with this day job of motherhood? I'm yanking hair out of brushes, snipping quesadillas into bowls for like the 1,000th time. I pick up kids at the carpool. The French say 4 a.m. is the hour of the wolf. But really, for mothers, it can be working mothers or just stay-at-homes. It doesn't matter. 4 p.m., carpool time, when the kids are in the car and their voices are chiming and you're having a glucose drop and you really should be eating. There was a morning, you know, towards the end of the book where I just can't get out of bed and I don't want my children to even look in my face because then they'll see my flat eyes and go, oh, mom's not going to be mom anymore. And it reminded me of my own mother who had gone through menopause. We didn't know that that's why she was hurling glass Pyrex dishes at the wall, but she did, and she was very depressed, and then would go to her bedroom for, you know, hours, and some moms went for days and years. So that's kind of a serious moment where I go, I don't want to be absent from my daughters. I want to figure, I'm going to just kind of like pickaxe myself to this mountain and stand here and hang on for them. And that's when I went to the gynecologist.
But you know, your mother died young, but during this roller coaster period, your father was alive and requiring more and more help. And to top it off, he's a bit eccentric. So the stories about your father are amusing to read about, but perhaps not so funny to live through. So can you describe your relationship with your father?
So my father is this eccentric Chinese engineer he certainly starred in his version of This American Life. Story. I think, you know, when he was in his 70s, my mom died early, he embarked on this, on marrying a series of Chinese mail order wives. Not one, three, and he's on his third. And they just got younger and younger because he figured that was his sort of his pension plan and his retirement. That he would just have a younger Chinese lady, you know, kind of massage his bunions and cut up his fruit for him. You know, he's just a wacky, wacky character. And, you know, although what happens in this book is that his younger wife, who's about 20 years younger, gets dementia at a fairly early age, unfortunately. Well, in her 70s, because he's in his 90s now. And so there goes that. We have to take care of her as well. But in the meantime, he has a Filipino caregiver who's, you know, a 42-year-old man who's in such great shape, he can sort of wash him and bathe him and lift his wheelchair through traffic. So now my father just becomes a terror on wheels.
Oh, no.
He'll go to UCLA and crash lectures and shout at the professors and, you know, kind of he pees wherever he wants to. I won't even go into that. He is like going, oh, I can have sex now. I need just 1/16th of a Viagra and I'm fine. Like, it's like you just want to hit him over the head with a frying pan and go, like, enough already. You know, be a sweet old man or be quietly, you know, sedated or something, that you have kind of like this baby, this very active baby in traffic who has his own power of attorney.
Oh, goodness.
Who's driving everyone absolutely nuts.
And you are a comedian. Your book is funny. But I'm wondering how much of it, if any, you were able to laugh about while you were going through it. Was it funny after, or were there moments that you actually did appreciate the humor while it was happening?
Oh, Mindy, I'd have to say no, funny after, for sure. It's never funny in the moment. It's never funny in the moment. And there's that section where my then sixth grader is flamed on Facebook, and she shouldn't even be on Facebook. And of course, because in perimenopause, your hormones, you know, affect the amygdala and the hippocampus, and you can feel rage and grudges and all these feelings that were subdued before. She said, they were mean to me. But then she was happy. Then she felt better and took a shower and Facebooked a little cat photo and went to bed. And, of course, I'm lying awake all night long, staring into the darkness, planning revenge. Because I call myself, like, not just a helicopter parent, but if you know the movie Apocalypse Now, Robert Duvall, you know, morning napalm. I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It's like, I'm going to wreak revenge on the sixth grade boy that said, oh, you're Facebook friends with your mommy. I was plotting all night, wreaking revenge on this boy, how I would just beat him up in the sixth grade middle school parking with my fists. Mm-hmm. It was stuff, and until, like, finally, you know, friend and my daughter go, yeah, I think you're taking this a little back. You know? So, yeah.
Well, you know, I think some of this is so funny because we can relate. And one of the lines in there that just made me laugh out loud was, I'm quoting now from your book, our symptoms are various. They include mood swings, sudden weight gain, and the appearance of morning chin hairs that by noon are long enough to braid and twirl up into thick Princess Leia buns.
Well, I think anything that has Princess Leia buns
is funny.
Is gold, you know. But yeah, wacky stuff does happen where you're going, what am I looking at now? I think I'm going to take off my glasses so I don't have to see what that is. So, yeah, it's crazy.
So funny. So despite the rough year, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah. And I know that some women have told me that their own comedy that they've started to name the little floaties that are around the tummy, like Squishy and Poofy, and like there's one a fish in Finding Nemo. I think that was Squishy. So there's some humor to be found there, I should say.
Okay. So despite the rough year, you did emerge on the other side intact and happier. So what kind of wisdom can you share? What couple of tips do you have?
A couple of tips that I have is first of all, lower the bar. Take at least three things off your plate, if you can, that you thought are duties that you absolutely have to do. There's very little that you absolutely have to do. I know I live in Los Angeles. I cannot leave my children by the side of the freeway. Okay, I'm their chauffeur. I get that. Everything else, if they eat dinner, it's three kinds of white food. It's rice and mashed potatoes on a Pillsbury biscuit while watching SpongeBob. They're home, they're safe, and SpongeBob will improve their vocabulary. Not at this point because they're 12 and 13, but you know what? They use a lot of good vocabulary words on their show. That's fine. So lower the bar. And the second thing, I think, that in terms of health, and I think bed rest is great. So if you have a Saturday and you wake up and you go, let's set the timer and see how many hours I can stay in bed today, not get out of bed.
If I use the bed as your cave.
The bed is your cave. If you need a catheter, so you don't have to get out of bed. If you can lift an arm to get the remote control, call that exercise for the day and call it a day. Because we really have a lot and too much stuff. Another thing a friend of mine said, and it's in the book, where she said, you know what? I would not have been able to get through menopause or my mother dying if I hadn't gained some weight. So gain the 25 pounds already. You'll feel better. And her theory was that fat actually stores estrogen, and she just felt much better. So I think, you know, and I know this is kind of really not controversial or goes against the grain, but all the sort of health things that we're supposed to do, you know, chocolate is good for the soul. Not just dark chocolate, milk chocolate. Have some if you need to, because, you know, I always say we live long enough anyway, so we don't have to be that much more healthy to live even longer. It's fine. So, and I think women make rules about what they're supposed to do. My gynecologist said when I was going through this, you can have, when these mood swings come over you and hot flashes, and some women have panic attacks, you know, just notice it and let it go by. Or you can have a certain sort of low-level you know, estrogen replacement, and you can talk to one's doctor about that, low-level hormone replacement if you need it, low-level antidepressant if you need it, or, again, do nothing and just notice when these things happen. And it's different for every woman.
Right.
And, you know, I'm the sort of woman that cannot get to sleep without a Tylenol PM every evening, and that's fine. I get rest. So do sort of whatever is needed and take a break and be easy on yourself because, again, In the 21st century, we're doing way more things than we ever did.
Sandra Ting Lo is the author of The Mad Woman in the Vulva, My Year of Raging Hormones. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mindy. It's been great.